So we get on here all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And we talk about billionaires.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We talk about how we think that billionaires in general should not exist.
Shouldn't exist, yeah.
Nobody needs that amount of money.
It's a societal failing.
Once you go past $999 million, you won. Mm-hmm. You win capitalism. You should get a cool big trophy that you pay for with the extra money that you bring in.
Yeah, with your tax dollars.
Exactly, with your fucking money. You should get a cool trophy and you get it. You won capitalism. You're capped at $999 million.
Everything after that taxed 100%.
When, apparently though, when Vietnam hears we shouldn't have billionaires, they seem to have taken that statement very literally.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And this week, 67-year-old businesswoman Trong Mai Lan was sentenced to death.
For what?
Fraud. She defrauded one of Vietnam's massive banks. I think it was Saigon Central.
I mean, there's ever a
that shit is
good
crazy.
Application of capital punishment. I'm kidding.
Anti-capital punishment podcast, but like,
but
like, that is crazy.
Yeah,
that's something that people joke about all the time, and uh-huh. I feel like real shit. This is what gives people like me and Jeremy a bad name.
What did she have like national level amount of fraud?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Like frauding like percents of the country's GDP.
Oh my god. Was she just lying about assets or something?
No. So I'm pretty sure things break down to where like Saigon Central Bank, Vietnamese law says you can't own more than 5% of like any bank. So they can make sure no one has like a controlling interest. She set up thousands of shell corporations and ended up owning 93% of this bank.
That's crazy.
She would use this to give herself illegal personal loans or like loans for her businesses or whatever. So she's just using this like national infrastructure just mm-hmm. Launder her wealth, kind of, or just amass more wealth. And it's even said here that she took $4 billion in cash and just kept it in her basement.
So she was just stealing.
I think, I don't know if this number is exactly accurate, but I had seen estimates that she defrauded like 3% of the country's GDP.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane,
dog. If we started doing something like that in the U.S., it'd be a massacre.
Oh my god, I know.
Bodies would be dropping in the U.S.
Could you imagine what would happen in 2008? Those guys did a crazy thing to the country and they got like a little slap on the wrist and then all their money back.
That would have been class warfare. That would have been crazy.
But like, holy shit, to sentence her to death is crazy.
Yeah, death sentence is crazy.
Death sentence is nuts. And it's like, the thought behind it that people are saying is that this is to send a chilling effect throughout the rest of the country to kind of stop corruption. And it's the government's way of showing that they are serious about being anti-corruption.
Mm.
But I feel like going this far is kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah, I would think so too, because for people like that, like, sure, death is obviously the end. Like, for any human life, like, death, that's it. But a fate worse than death to them is just seizing all of their assets.
That's what I'm saying, just making them poor.
Yeah, so they're not a billionaire anymore, and if they ever get out of jail and get to live life again, they have to labor.
Yeah.
Like, that's a fate worse than death.
Or just making them go to get a real job. That is a great punishment for someone who does something like this.
Yeah, I don't see how the death penalty would be any more effective than, like, however much jail time and seizing all of the assets this lady has.
And it's also crazy because when you consider like ways that Vietnam is structured and the amount of government officials that she had to go through, bribe, or just the amount of government officials that had to be complacent in allowing her to do this is high.
Yeah.
So how can you claim to be anti-corruption while giving them a slap on the wrist and fucking killing her?
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. She's expected to appeal. And I personally think that she'll, because, you know, I would appeal too. If someone tried to kill me, I would definitely appeal the sentence. But I feel like maybe the appeal will go through just because they just want to get out there the death penalty and maybe don't want to actually kill her, but I don't know.
See, this makes me feel like the people going after the death penalty want to get her to not talk ever again. You know what I mean?
Oh, shit.
Like, maybe it's some people that are like, if we can silence her, you know, maybe justifiably, who knows, because she stole so much money from the Vietnamese people, but if we could silence her forever, then she'll never expose, like, who helped her.
Exactly. She'll never expose, like, I don't know, someone else who has $1 billion in their basement in cash.
Yeah, that's a little tinfoil hat. I don't know anything about how Vietnam's economy is structured, but
neither do I do know that they've had a history of corruption because, you know, country was ravaged.
Yeah.
Country was ravaged by us.
Not long ago.
Things like that happened 50 years ago. You know what I'm saying? So there's been corruption, and they're trying to move away from it, but this is a bit crazy.
Don't they have in Vietnam, like, a statue of how much they hate John McCain?
Do they really?
I think so.
It's kind of sick. They captured him after his fucking
I think so.
Plane crashed or some shit. And then they erected a statue?
I don't know if it was like a statue specifically anti John McCain, like as the guy,
John McCain. Oh, okay.
But I think I feel like I saw something like that because Joe Biden visited Vietnam maybe like 2 years ago at this point or something. And it was some war memorial, but it was specifically anti-American
war memorial. Like, yeah. Oh, fuck this guy that we captured. That was a prisoner of war. That's so sick, actually.
Well, and like John McCain is like viciously
awful guy. Yeah. You know, I got that blood in me. You know what I'm saying? Maybe that's why I'm so anti-billionaire.
My favorite John McCain memory is him like using an anti-Vietnamese slur, but he's like, I can say it because I was a prisoner of war.
I assimilated into the culture.
Yeah. John McCain sucked. He was a bad guy.
That's insane.
But he was the last regular Republican, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
What a departure from politics.
Vietnam said, you guys don't want billionaires? Word.
We got it. But like real shit though, I feel like these kind of actions from people who run their country and claim to be like communists, you know what I mean? Because I'm pretty sure in Vietnam there's one party, it's the Communist Party, doing shit like this, despite Vietnam increasingly moving into more free market solutions kind of like grow their GDP, because it's kind of something developing countries need to do to compete with people like us who kind of fuck everything up.
They're often forced to by groups like the IMF through structural adjustment programs and stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's really, they're communists in name only, but when Republicans see that, they don't think that, and they think that's the kind of shit I believe. So it's like, oh man.
Well, yeah, and it's like, think of how many times, maybe listeners can relate to this, think of how many times you'll tell like a normie billionaire shouldn't exist, and then they assume like, oh, you want to kill them?
Yeah.
Like, no, that's like, not what I'm saying. It's like, oh, man. I'm not saying we should go around and murder a bunch of people. I'm saying like society shouldn't be built in such a way where you can get $1 billion.
Yeah.
Like that's 99, the argument.
999 million. You know what? Fucking 99 million. You know what? $10 million. Yeah. That's so much goddamn money, bro. Oh,
you can buy anything with that much.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
What else do you need?
Oh my gosh.
Ridiculous, man. Welcome back to Head in the Office, everybody. Today on this show, we got to talk about Iran. Doing a little response. Uh-huh. We got to talk about Arizona, bad stuff out of Arizona.
We got to talk about the GOP.
And some third parties. Maybe getting ourselves into trouble again.
And maybe some fucking red-blooded American principle deregulation.
Oh, 100%.
Something I fuck with.
Before we get into that, though, I will remind you all, if you want to support the show, you must support the show.
Yes.
So at least, at the very least, humor us and go over to patreon.com/headintheofficepod. Check out the tiers we got available. We got some, we've been saying the last two pods, we got some fun stuff coming. Become a patron, maybe get early access.
Maybe even just check it out. Maybe you don't even have to pledge, just check it out. And maybe be enticed by the various wares we offer.
And you won't have to listen to any of the commercials throughout the episodes. You'll be able to just listen to the whole thing uninterrupted. And I know that's what you want.
And who doesn't?
Exactly. You can also get some merch at headintheoffice.com. Subscribe to us on YouTube. You probably came from TikTok, but if you didn't follow us there, follow us on Instagram for when TikTok gets nuked, because like Iran, it might happen if Republicans get control. Another way you can support the show is by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple. We have a couple to read off today. No sobbing and mobbing on this episode, because we actually got our 5-star reviews. The first one by M.M. Anderson. Brothers from another mother, they say, first and foremost, I condemn Hamas.
Wonderful.
Second, a big shout out to Jeremy and Gage for being my number one favorite politics podcast. I recently joined the Sunday Supremacists, the Sunday Supremes, to always start off my week on the right foot. Best decision ever. They embodied the true spirit of progressive politics, providing brilliant analysis and critiques with a great sense of humor and passion. I truly think of both of you as brothers, and I'm grateful for the amazing work that you do.
As you should.
Yeah, we're family.
As you should, especially, you know, you can, like, if you're on a Patreon, you can be a brother, a sister, a sibling in general. Yeah. If you're not, though, maybe you could be a cousin.
We're blood relatives.
Yeah, but, like, on the Patreon, but if you're not, you can be like a cousin, maybe second cousin, something like that.
Yeah, or just like a family friend.
Yeah, just like a family friend that I like refer to as my cousin, but you're not actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like our moms are friends.
Yeah, precisely.
100%. This next review from Mitten Leftist, appalled by the omission from New and Noteworthy by T-Mold16. Have any of the other New and Noteworthy podcasts explicitly condemned Hamas? I don't think so. Mm-mm. Me personally, I don't think so. Let's get the number one geopolitical podcast with only correct takes up on them charts, Apple.
That's right.
I found these Hiddle boys fervently searching Michigan politics on the internet. As a municipal political activist and previous statewide marijuana lobbyist, wow, living in Port Huron, a successful lobbyist for a good thing, rare, living in Port Huron now, it's great to hear fresh takes from these lads. I try not to get too overwhelmed with the world around us, and even at such a local level, things seem grim when it comes to progress. But even on my darkest days, sitting around a bright porcelain throne, it's always nice to hear from my fellow mitten leftists as someone in the putrid district Lisa McClain serves.
Oh, Lisa McClain, that's rough. Republican from Michigan. Yeah, not great. But another Michigander, hero.
We love to hear that.
Hero of democracy.
Hero, you won.
Another person that in 2028 will be voting for Big Gretch for president.
Hell yeah.
Because that's what I'm going to be doing.
That's right. I'm writing her in too.
Over anybody else. Don't even care more voting progressive
Gretch.
Candidates.
Don't care voting Gretch.
Exactly. The last Apple review here is from Matthew for Plays. They said, to make my soon non-parasocial friends kick their feet and smile.
That's right, brother.
First, I condemn Hamas. These guys are some of the funniest people I've listened to and have some of the best takes. If you aren't listening, you're missing out. Lastly, I condemn Hamas. Just a condemnation sandwich. I love it.
Perfect.
I love it.
Perfect. That's how all things should go. We got one review on here from Instagram.
Okay.
From Kaz. First and foremost, I condemn Hamas. Real. And so does my girlfriend, who I've recently convinced to listen to the pod when she visited from Germany in March. Safe to say, the hand of Hiddo has extended its reach to Deutschland as the number one geopolitical podcast. Mm. Keep up the good work from Kaz with non-parasocial love. Five fucking warm-blooded Hamas-condemning American stars.
Hell yeah, brother.
That's right. Fuck yeah. Kaz would also like me to add that to his girlfriend, they miss you.
Oh, that's nice.
They miss you. So
that's nice. But like, over in America,
exactly,
the only real country in the world, this is where freedom lives.
That's what I'm saying. So get over here quicker.
That's what I'm saying. And also, I appreciate the condemnations of Hamas. Mm-hmm. We couldn't make this show without condemning Hamas.
No.
So many podcasts I listen to, all these words, not a single condemnation.
I dare say we're the only podcast that comes on every day. And not only do we condemn Hamas every week, but so do our viewers.
I think we might condemn Hamas more than like right-wing podcasts and commentators.
Absolutely.
And they're always yapping about Israel this, Israel that. We need to protect Israel. Best ally ever.
I'm saying.
Greatest democracy in the Middle East. It's like, dog, we condemn Hamas more than you.
I'm saying we condemn Hamas.
Yeah, exactly.
We condemn Hamas's actions.
What do they fucking know anyways?
Oh my God. Speaking of condemning Hamas.
Speaking of condemnations,
speaking of things that happened on Saturday, kind of out of the blue. Mm-hmm. Iran retaliated. So Saturday evening, reports came out that Iran launched a mixture of about 200 drones and ballistic missiles at Israel. The strike was in retaliation for the strikes Israel performed on Iran's consulate in Damascus, Syria, that took the lives of two Iranian generals, five other officers, as well as a couple other civilians and police officers, in what was a massive escalation in tensions between the two states.
Yeah, no, something unprecedented. Israel has hit targets in Syria before, but hitting a military consulate
leveling a consulate.
Yeah, killing civilians in the capital city of Syria is crazy.
Killing generals and officers, like, that's, like, why did they do that?
Yeah, no, that's crazy.
What the fuck were they thinking, right? But as of Saturday night, no deaths had been reported. The only injury that I saw was Israel said a 10-year-old girl who was hit in the head by some shrapnel, and she's being treated at the hospital.
This is from Iran's response, right?
Yes, this is from Iran's response. And the shrapnel, it's unsure whether it was an actual missile that hit. There are reports that West Jerusalem was hit and a military base. Mm-hmm. That was the only other damage. So it's unclear whether or not it's shrapnel from that or possibly shrapnel from Israel or the US or UK shooting down drones above Israel's airspace.
Yeah, and either way, like Iran, like that's on Iran.
Yes.
Right? And I condemn this attack.
I do.
I
condemn attacks that could further escalate tensions between a. In an already unstable region.
I condemn it wholeheartedly.
What can I say? And so it took several hours from Iran's announcement of the strikes for the drones to physically fly to Israel. And this is likely how larger scale damage was avoided, since Israel was able to scramble their own air force to shoot down threats, as well as rely on the U.S. baby, our military infrastructure in the region to help. The U.K. also scrambled some of their own jets to help out, but they're just biting our flow.
Yeah, and isn't that what the Iron Dome does? It's like an air defense system, right?
Yeah. But I think the whole point is we wanted to get the drones before they could even get in.
Yeah.
Which that makes sense because we don't want shrapnel flying on civilians.
And Iran's like two countries away.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And so some statements that came out after this. Iran's mission to the UN said, quote, Iran's military action was in response to the Zionist regime's aggression against our diplomatic premises in Damascus. The matter can be deemed concluded. However, should the Israeli regime make another mistake, Iran's response will be considerably more severe. It is a conflict between Iran and the rogue Israeli regime from which the U.S. must stay away, end quote.
Yeah. This does make me feel like Iran wasn't trying to escalate more, but felt like they needed to respond because, like, you can't just not.
I think so because it's like also,
it's like saber rattling.
If they wanted to, escalate more, if they wanted to actually do a crazy response, they could have just launched missiles.
Yeah, they would have like dropped a ballistic missile on the Knesset or something.
Yeah, exactly. They wouldn't have launched drones, then given Israel hours of warning.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a bit of that. There's also a bit of like taken at face value. It seems like Israel could really get off pretty easy with this one.
Mm-hmm.
Iran's giving them a huge out, considering there were little to no casualties and only minor damages sustained throughout Israel. But I feel like there are some complicating factors here that we have to consider when talking about Iran's response.
Yeah.
It's well known that Iran funds and interacts with terror cells in the region like the Houthis. And while Israel could continue to avoid direct conflict with Iran if they don't retaliate, I feel like it's a little bit ignorant to say that things in the region aren't going to get more tense.
Okay.
Say with Iran sending more funding to the Houthis in the short term or just acting through their other arms that aren't necessarily state associated.
Right.
But that's something that you can't really quantify. It's just kind of a bit of speculation analysis on the situation. But if Iran did want to get into direct conflict with Israel, I feel like they could be trying to take advantage of maybe Netanyahu's anger management issues to coax them into a response.
And at that point, it's like, you got to exercise some self-control, Israel.
Uh-huh. Oh, the past like, 6 months, there's been issues with Israel exercising self-control. And that's kind of why I bring that up.
But I mean, like, specifically in the context of a country like Iran, like, Israel's got the backing of the United States. I think in a direct war, Israel would ultimately win. But obviously, it would be a lot worse. A lot of people would die. And Iran isn't really a country you can push around like you could push around Syria, or certainly the way you can push around Palestinians within Israel, right? And so when it comes to, like, self-control, obviously, they'd never exercise self-control with Palestinians, but, like, Iran's a real country, dog.
A real country. You could get into a real war,
yeah,
and they're a bigger country with Yes, while Israel could rely on the U.S. to back them in a war, honestly, hopefully not.
Mm-hmm.
hopefully they don't drag our ass into a war. I still don't think it goes well for really either side of this thing. We don't have too much of a good history with wars in that region.
And it's crazy. We could just, like, make Israel stop.
I know!
Like, we could just say it. And I think Joe Biden has done something to, or, you know, some diplomat, maybe Antony Blinken, has done something to the effect of, like, you need to stop.
Yeah.
Because it seems like, at least as far as I know, Israel... I mean, maybe you're going to tell me they're going to respond, but it seems like things are okay for the moment. I'm hoping Biden said pump the brakes or else, but I have a feeling he's like, pump the brakes or maybe we'll do something.
But it's like Iran gave them a direct out. Iran said strike that really did no fucking damage. We call it even now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all on Israel to just not be psychotic.
Yeah.
Really, it's just that's all it comes down to. Oh my God. But speaking of Netanyahu, the PM had this to say, quote, in recent years, and especially in recent weeks, Israel has been preparing for a direct attack by Iran. Our defensive systems are deployed. We are ready for any scenario, both defensively and offensively.
Oh, no.
The state of Israel is strong. The IDF is strong. The public is strong. Another statement, quote, we appreciate the U.S. standing alongside Israel. I certainly don't. As well as the support of Britain, France, and many other countries. We have determined a clear principle. Whoever harms us, we will harm them. We will defend ourselves against any threat and will do so level-headedly and with determination.
Doug, you can't call it defense when you hit their consulate building.
That's what I'm saying. You started this.
Yeah.
This wasn't going to happen if you had continued doing, I don't know, like regular strikes outside your borders like you had been doing, because there's been an escalation for a couple months or even years there. But that strike in Damascus was particularly egregious.
Well, even if you want to say, oh, well, Iran funds Hamas sometimes, so that's an act of aggression, so we're just defending ourselves by striking against Iran. Yeah, you've already been striking much smaller targets in Syria to push back against Iran, hitting a diplomat building, killing diplomats, high-ranking military officials, and Syrian citizens is clearly an escalation.
Uh-huh.
That's not a defensive tactic.
Yes.
That's going on offense.
And it's like, I'm pretty sure Israel never issued a response on why they did it. I had seen rumors saying that there was a Houthi there that the Irans were meeting with, which, like, sure, whatever. I still don't think it's justified. No. I still don't think you can go do that.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of insane.
Their calculation is, like, if there's one person near or in the building that is, to us, deemed a threat by, like, our artificial intelligence model, then we can kill anybody in the surrounding area.
If there's one child in the area who has a bit of Hamas in their soul.
Oh, speaking of children, did you see that Israel just killed, like, 3 children of some Hamas guy?
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
Because they're children of the Hamas guy.
Well, that makes sense.
I don't remember the Hamas dude's name. I think I'm pretty sure he was a Hamas guy, but 3 of the kids died, and they were just like, well.
Was it like a strike on, like, a family home?
Must have been,
they've been doing for a while? Oh, wow.
Pretty sick. Well, you know, the kids are going to grow up and be Hamas.
Well, of course.
Every kid has Hamas inside of their brain. They're all reading Mein Kampf, after all.
Exactly. It's a gene.
Yeah.
The Hamas gene is passed down generations. You know what I mean? It's going to be tough to eradicate.
It's genetic. So,
and it's like, I had seen other reports that people like Ben-Gvir or other people within the cabinet great, morally principled guy, have been a lot more publicly upset about this than Netanyahu in these statements, which makes sense. That's kind of the trend. And this is a statement Netanyahu made in English. So, you know, those are always bit more measured than the ones he makes in their native language.
Yeah.
So I hope things don't happen. I really do.
Was Ben-Gvir mad about the attack from Iran or about Israel's attack on Iran?
Attack from Iran.
Okay, so he wanted more.
From Iran. I don't know if it was Ben-Gvir. It's like one of those type of guys.
Oh. Well,
Been statements on, like, Israeli news about how they want blood.
Yeah,
like,
Ben-Gvir and his people were like made in a lab to be as evil as possible.
Oh my God,
like,
I know.
Insane.
It's insane. Yeah. So, anyway, moving back to domestic politics a little bit. How did the leader of the free world respond? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Biden issued a statement saying, quote, "Our commitment to Israel's security against threats from Iran and its proxies is ironclad."
Is it?
That's what I'm saying. And that's kind of like the weird phrasing that I take issue with here. What do you mean it's ironclad?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so ironclad that you would let them draw us into a war should they respond?
Well, yeah, because Antony Blinken and I can't remember, one of the national security guys, both of them in press conferences, like, backed off immediately. And they were like, we did not support this. We do not support this.
Biden later came on and said he would not support any retaliatory strike from Israel, which it's like, we should have led with that.
Yeah.
We definitely should have led with that. And maybe, you know, we should use this as an opportunity to kind of wedge defensive aid against Israel against them. Use that as a bet to say, you know what, we're not going to fund the Iron Dome if you're going to keep doing the bullshit you're doing in Gaza.
Crazy that it takes this to get to that point.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
This and, like, the death of an American to actually say, well, maybe we'll condition aid now.
Yeah.
Not the 30,000 Palestinians that have died to this point, a third of which have been children.
Uh-huh.
Crazy.
It's nuts. But something is like, what does this mean, like, broadly for what's happening in Gaza?
Yeah.
And my answer to that, it being so soon, I really don't know. We have no idea how Israel is going to respond, but I have heard some chatter about this possibly, like, taking some focus away from what's going on in Gaza. But I think that line of thinking is a bit misguided, and I kind of want to get ahead of it because it's kind of similar to the Houthi situation we had a couple weeks ago where people are saying, oh no, the Houthis, they're attacking the trade to bring awareness to what's going on in Gaza.
Yeah, they're posting squares on Instagram.
Exactly. I feel like saying Iran is doing this because of Gaza or to help the people of Gaza is in line with that, and it's a bit misguided and not the actual case. If actual broader regional war was sparked because of this, is Israel cannot control themselves, that only is going to bring further instability to not only the region, but also aid groups.
Mm-hmm.
Aid groups are going to be more strained and more scattered around the place, and they're not going to be able to focus on what they can in Gaza.
Yeah.
Because shit's getting crazy. Shit's popping off.
Yeah, I also want to note that when this is usually going to come from leftists, but people on the left, when they'll say, like, Iran or the Houthis are defending the Palestinian people or trying to help them, it's like these groups don't care about Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when Republicans, to fearmonger about China, invoke Uyghur Muslims.
Yes.
They don't care about Uyghur Muslims.
No, they don't like them either.
I don't think Iran really cares about Palestinians. They're using them as a wedge against Israel because they want more regional power. That's all it is.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just far more cynical on this issue, and I don't think there's evidence to suggest that Houthis actually care about Palestinians or Iran actually cares about Palestinians. They just recognize that there's a sort of symbolic and political opportunity for them to exploit the situation and gain more regional power and support against Israel.
Well, it's like, if they did care about the issue, maybe there is more complicated history about this than I don't understand. Please, like, genuinely correct me if I'm wrong, but would they not then take in refugees? No one is willing to take in Palestinian
refugees.
Iran's
kind of far away, but
Iran is far away, but other powers around the area, the regional powers use this as a wedge against Israel without really doing much except for funding weapons for Hamas, which ultimately makes the problem worse for the people of Palestine.
Yeah.
I don't know. And if there is nuance that I'm missing there, please do let me know. But that's kind of the general thoughts.
Yeah.
And just ultimately really hoping Israel does not respond, because broader regional war is going to be disastrous for a population of 2 million people that is already on the brink of starvation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, things will not look good.
Yeah, and a lot of people keep asking, like, why won't Egypt just take the refugees? Because that would be the easiest place for them to go, is just, you know,
just
go
cross Rafah.
Cross Rafah. But that's like 2 million people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Hard.
2 million people, like, that are all on the edge of famine.
There are absolutely nuances to, like, the refugee thing and just the whole entire issue. But I am, like you, a bit cynical about the group's intentions when they combat
Israel. They also,
Israel.
Like, they shouldn't have to leave, you know?
No,
what
they
mean?
Shouldn't. No.
Not at all. And also on top of that, it's like, Iran, the Ayatollah, I don't think they care too much about freedom. Like, just knowing what they do and who they fund.
True. No Nikki Haley, but.
No Nikki Haley, but I don't think these people are, like, vanguards of leftist thought or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Ridiculous. Yeah. And so as of Saturday night, or I guess Sunday morning, Iran is bracing for a counterattack. Mm-hmm. Whether or not Israel bites is up in the air. Whether or not Israel drags us into a war somewhere we have no place being, better not happen. I'll be very upset about that.
Yeah.
Learn nothing.
I don't want U.S. boots on the ground. I don't even want U.S. missiles flying into Tehran or anything like that.
Like, and it's like,
no.
With my optimist hat on, I'm thinking there's a possibility, a very slim chance, that Joe Biden can use this to kind of rein in Netanyahu, hopefully, maybe. Put my optimist hat on.
Especially because Joe Biden, when he was vice president, was supposed to be like the international affairs guy.
Yeah.
Like, he was the dude when Obama wasn't doing it, they sent around the world to, like, do diplomacy. Foreign policy is supposed to be, like, Biden's thing.
Yes.
And if he can't recognize, if he can't see through his sort of love for Israel as the Zionist that he is, and see the fact that, like, getting into a broader war here will be disastrous. Mm-hmm. Like, someone could end up just using a fucking nuke. I don't think Iran has one, but if they build a dirty bomb or something like that, it could get a lot worse.
Yeah.
If he can't see that at this point, I don't know what to say. I feel like he's got to know that this is definitely bad, even if he doesn't care that much about Palestinians.
Yes, I know Biden has come out and said that he's going to convene the G7 leaders to kind of talk about this. Who knows what's going to happen? And Israel asked for an emergency UN Security Council meeting today, Sunday the 14th at 4 p.m. That's a bit after we record today, so we'll see what comes of that in the coming days.
Yeah, and there's been so many people World War III posting.
Yeah.
Chill out, man.
I don't know about that one. I feel like that's a bit far, especially considering that the strike didn't do damage.
Let's think critically. Like, not everything is going to be World War III.
Exactly. Not everyone is itching to jump into wars. If anything, people will be dragged into them, but that process will still take a bit longer, and there needs to be a bit more damage done before we get to that point.
Yeah, it certainly could spiral out of control, especially if Joe Biden doesn't start acting right, and we can't rein in Netanyahu, and he kind of just goes crazy on Iran. It could certainly spiral out of control, but even that, I don't know that it would be World War III, and I think that we should spend a little bit more time focusing on exactly what's happening and analyzing it, rather than just saying, like, oh, well, that's it, we're all going to die. Because, like, if the nukes start falling, what the fuck are you going to do?
Yeah.
Die.
It's like, all right, well, I'll sit back.
Yeah, until then, let's do what we can to talk, create discourse, and maybe use public pressure to push Joe Biden in the correct direction.
Yes.
Let's not just give up here.
But even, like, going back a little bit to talk about, like, the issue of how regional powers kind of use Palestinians as a wedge issue against Israel, we also have to consider, before October 7th, everyone in the region had been normalizing relations with Israel, despite their continued apartheid in Palestine.
Well, yeah, and that's Trump.
Exactly. You know,
that's Trump and Kushner with the Abraham Accords.
So it's like they were already making deals. Regional powers were leaving this group of people behind as well. It's such an unfortunate situation from all sides of it. What do you do?
Which is why it's laughable when people say that, like, oh, this happened under Joe Biden and you know, this never would have happened under Donald Trump. It's because Trump, in a lot of ways, laid the foundations for exactly this to happen with Israel normalizing relationships with Saudi Arabia and other Arab countries. It's like, Palestinians were completely excluded from that deal. And you can certainly imagine Hamas or Palestinians broadly being upset that, like, yeah, we're not even mentioned in these deals.
Trump made it so much easier for everyone in the region to ignore Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
He made it so much easier for Israel to continue what they were doing and put less attention than there even was on it before October 7th.
Yeah.
Like, and it just the to, speaking to the people, not just World War III posting, but getting on there and saying Iran wouldn't attack Israel under Trump. Trump got Trump. And for any leftist that believes that, Trump went on, I think it was this past week on Truth Social, and said he would handle the issue in Gaza quickly.
Yeah. What does that mean?
You all know what that means.
Uh-huh.
You all know what that means. There are clear options here.
Yeah. And also, like, Trump ramped up the drone war compared to Obama and did all kinds of other military maneuvers, assassinated Qasem Soleimani. Like, there was tons of ways he escalated tensions, even if they didn't directly result in brand new wars.
Even escalating the Palestinian issue.
Yeah.
With, I don't think it was, maybe it was included in the Abraham Accords, but in, he claims to have brokered these peace deals with Hamas and Israel that never actually happened, where all of the farmland was to be given up from Palestine and given to Israel.
Yeah.
And they were to be shoved into unfertile areas of the desert.
Also, moving the embassy, of course, is another sort of diplomat, or not even diplomatic, but like foreign policy action that probably enraged Hamas and Palestinians.
Yeah, because it was moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem,
uh-huh,
an area that they're kind of supposed to share, but like not really. It's still very apartheid and segregated. Like,
it, there's a lot of things that have contributed. Well, I mean, like the history is like 75 years long, right? Even goes back before that. But to act as though everything happening right now is specifically the fault of Joe Biden is very short-sighted.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that things have been pretty bad under Joe Biden, and I think he could do a whole hell of a lot more to make it better. But to say that either, you know, the war in Ukraine with Russia or the war now, Israel just destroying the lives of so many Palestinians, to say that's all Joe Biden's fault or that he caused all of this is just crazy.
No, he's just complicit in it, which isn't like much worse.
Yeah. And also, like, peace deals can be bad, right? Like, it might be the case that if Trump was president, he would broker a peace deal with Ukrainians and Russians really quickly.
Yeah.
But that peace deal could also be just Ukraine ceding a ton of ground.
Oh, yeah. That peace deal could be, oh, you guys just combine.
Yeah.
You crush it.
Like, Russia. Yeah. Ukraine no longer exists. Like, that. A peace deal can be bad, too, depending on the power imbalance. So
not every deal is a good deal.
Yeah. Folks. Trump is and Trump is straight up bad on foreign policy. Like, unambiguous. It's crazy that he even, like, by some figures in the media, gets this title of like, oh, he was great on foreign policy, started no new wars.
Like, that's
he was the anti-war president.
One, low fucking bar.
Yeah.
Incredibly low bar. And also, so many people talk about peace in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Like, honestly, Jared Kushner brokered peace in the Middle East. I've never heard something so untrue before.
Mm-hmm.
He brokered peace in the Middle East by telling Palestinians that they were going to get nothing by taking from a group who was already...
One-state solution.
Like, come on, brother. Yeah. Like, what are we doing?
One-state solution, but the bad one.
Exactly, yeah, the bad version of the one-state solution.
Yeah.
Not the one where we come together and settle our differences and coexist.
A multicultural democracy like it could have been.
Exactly, more one-state solution in the way that Netanyahu is currently envisioning it.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, man.
Yeah.
Everyone knows 2024, it's an election year, right? You know what else is an immutable fact? Wednesday weenies always lose to the weekly news cycle.
You're always behind.
This is even more undeniable in 2024. These primary Iowa caucus happening on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Super Tuesday, that's in the name. Yep. Wednesday weenie, again, in the name. If you want to get ahead of the news cycle, you need to head on over to patreon.com/headintheofficepod.
Listen, if you want the news when it happens rather than after it happens, consider becoming a patron. It's a good way to support the show, and it's a good way to stay up to date on everything this year as we deal with this tumultuous election season together.
Wear that Head in the Office patron badge on your sleeve. You can run around always. I'm a patron on Head in the Office. I get the news when it happens.
Back to the episode. Moving on, back to domestic politics.
Back to domestic politics.
We're not even just coming back domestic. We're coming stateside. We're coming into a great American state, a swing state, one that's going to be very important for this upcoming election. And,
one that, you know, the deal might be a little bit more sealed in this
Oh,
one.
Yeah. This is a crazy story. I'll even hit it with Beyond Parody.
This was
the biggest news last week until the stuff with Iran kicked off again. But last Tuesday, the state of Arizona had some crazy news come out.
I love that.
What happened was the Arizona State Supreme Court ruled that an anti-abortion law from 1864, that's 18, not 19, 1864.
That's Civil War-ish, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
They ruled that this anti-abortion law from 1864 was enforceable. Of course, this law also predates the existence of Arizona as a state in the Union. Arizona wasn't made a state till like the early 1900s.
So say
it was a territorial law. It's fucking absurd.
I fail to see how a territorial law could possibly have carried over to govern a state.
This is the land of the living.
Oh my God.
Nobody who wrote that law or lived under that law is alive anymore. And this is the land of the living.
You know what? Dare I say? Mm-hmm. Maybe this is controversial. Maybe this is a hot take.
Okay.
Laws that were overturned, you know, during the Civil War era, laws that we said were bad during that time, maybe they're overturned for a reason.
Well, it was only unenforceable because of Roe v. Wade.
It's been sitting
dormant, sort of like the Michigan law from the 1930s. But this one's even crazier because Michigan was a state.
That's true.
Michigan was completely a state in the 1930s. Arizona didn't exist in 1864.
Oh my God.
That's crazy, crazy talk. So this law is a near total abortion ban, has no exceptions for rape or incest, and does have exceptions for the life of the mother, but who knows what the hell that would mean in 1864. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What is an exception for life of the mother?
They were just chopping soldiers' limbs off, thinking that was a great way to treat wounds. Like exactly. Back then, there was no medicine.
Yeah. So this law, I'm going to read exactly what it requires. It requires the prosecution of, quote, a person who provides, supplies, or administers to a pregnant woman or procures such woman to take any medicine, drug, or substance, or uses or employs any instrument or other means whatever with the intent thereby to procure the miscarriage of such woman unless it is necessary to save her life. Basically saying no abortion at all, and the doctors or people, I suppose, causing the abortion would be charged with a crime.
Oh, word. So we're going to see just doctors just not caring for women.
Right.
We're going to see pharmacists refusing to dispense methotrexate, the RA drug, for women who have rheumatoid arthritis. They're just going to have to suffer.
Mifepristone,
that's right. I think methotrexate is another one, too. I can't remember exactly.
There's a couple of drugs that cause miscarriages.
Exactly. There are a couple of drugs that are used to treat genuine chronic conditions that also can be used to induce an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
So women just won't be treated for pain anymore.
Nice. Pretty sick. And I want to be 1,000% clear on this. This is happening specifically because of Republicans in the state and, of course, Republicans broadly throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the 1864 ban was blocked by Roe versus Wade when that happened in the 70s. That got overturned by conservative justices in Dobbs v. Jackson. Yeah. And then after Dobbs in 2022, the Republican Attorney General at the time, Mark Brnovich in Arizona, pressured judges to lift the injunction on the 1864 law. So this whole process was kicked off only a few years ago. Once Democrats took power in Arizona after the midterm elections, the Democratic AG tried to stop the process, but the legal proceedings already were in process, and they eventually reached the Arizona Supreme Court. Then the Arizona Supreme Court, who was dominated by conservatives, appointed by Republicans, brought the law back to life, which is why we're here now. And then, most recently, Democrats in the Arizona House tried to vote on a bill to repeal the ban, and the state Republican Party voted to shoot down the measure and then adjourn the legislature for a week.
So
this was last Wednesday.
They had opportunities here.
Yes.
To stop. And
guess how many Republicans were trying to repeal the ban? Guess how many?
How many?
One. One guy.
One Republican.
One Republican was like, hey, maybe this is a bad idea.
One Republican could fucking think.
Yeah. And then, of course, the legislature is controlled by the GOP in the state.
That's so many layers, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, obviously not glad about this law, but it's like there is something in me that's like, wow, you know, it is kind of reaffirming, reassuring, validating to see just how fucking stupid all of these people are.
Uh-huh.
Abortion, again, we say it every goddamn week, has not lost once Mm-mm. since Dobbs v. Jackson.
Yeah.
Every single state has come across. It has not lost once. It has provided unprecedented amounts of turnouts in midterm elections, the ones nobody fucking cares about.
Yeah.
What the fuck are we doing?
And the thing here is, like, Republicans can't really walk away from the ban. Republicans in the state of Arizona can't really walk away from the ban because a lot of them are on record saying, I hope the state Supreme Court overturns it so that we can have the ban back in place. Nice. Like, they were hoping for this to happen. And at every single level, at every conceivable step along the way, Republicans did everything they could to make sure this happened. And I don't see how there's any optical or rhetorical way out of this for them. They caused it. A near total abortion ban in the state.
And it's like, it's not controversial to say that. I think they're just brain rotted.
Yeah.
Right. But like the all sense of electoral strategy just out the window. And I mean, I'm not mad about it. Like I would be for the Democrats. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I'm not mad about it. Like I am at the Democrats for immigration. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it's Republicans and I want them to lose.
Yeah.
But just like the person within me who thinks,
Yeah.
It's just the thinking thing. Here, like, what is...
I'm a thinking thing.
What's the thought process behind this? And I had seen a couple of tweets this week. I don't know if this is real or not, but people saying Trump made a statement saying that he is proudly the guy who got Roe v. Wade overturned. Mm-hmm. A ridiculous thing to say. Like, let's think a little bit. Mm-hmm. One, you should never be proud of taking people's rights away. And two, that's just not good election strategy considering the current climate. And then I had also seen tweets by people, maybe more on the fringes of right Twitter, talk about how, wow, you conservatives want to, like people who have fully drank the Kool-Aid on the issue, saying that, you know what, this is child murder no matter what way you slice it. You can't do anything with abortion because you are killing kids.
Yeah.
I guess they're morally consistent, if anything.
I was going to say, at least they're consistent.
Getting on here and talking about how you Republicans want to favor short-term wins over the lives of the unborn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, what, you have no idea how to win power.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing there is, like, even if Republicans came out and they were like, okay, 15-week ban, the people that think abortion is completely murder all the time, still going to vote Republican.
Exactly.
They're not going to get disillusioned because they want as much pain as possible.
Which is kind of crazy to think that Republicans nationally, and I guess at the state legislator level, are still, like, appeasing them.
Yeah.
They're not going to not vote for you. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I shouldn't be giving them free game. Maybe I should keep it to myself.
And
but like,
yeah, the Trump claiming victory over Roe v. Wade is interesting because I have a quote in here later that we'll talk about where he's seemingly contradicting himself
a couple
of times. And I'm not sure if he can find a way to appease the base on this one.
Nice.
We'll see though. But in terms of what's happening now, the Democratic governor, Katie Hobbs, is already demanding that the state legislature do something to fix this. Not sure if they will. Obviously, I just mentioned how Democrats in the House tried to implement or introduce a bill that would repeal the ban, and the Republicans didn't let it pass. Maybe something will change when they come back on Wednesday. Who knows? The Democratic Attorney General has already said she will not be prosecuting anyone in violation of the law.
Nice.
The 1864 law, just exercising prosecutorial discretion.
That's something they can do.
Yes, that is completely legal within her bounds to do. This doesn't mean that people won't try, though.
She's the opposite of Ken Paxton.
Yes, good version.
Mr. Sodomy Laws.
This doesn't mean that prosecutors, perhaps on a lower level in the state, won't still try to prosecute these cases. Yeah. This AG is just saying at the state level, we're not going to be prosecuting people.
Which is
but that,
good.
That doesn't mean it doesn't open people up to lawsuits, and it certainly doesn't mean that clinics are going to stay open and keep working.
No, absolutely not. You know what I mean? Would not be surprised if they closed down Thursday.
Yeah, well, like, and that's exactly what I got in here next. A lot of people are obviously confused as to how quickly this goes into effect. The court said at least 2 weeks so that they can like figure out whatever complications there are. Yeah. A couple other people are saying a few months. It's unclear what's going to happen here. This confusion, of course, as intended, I would say, has hit the AZ abortion clinics the worst. These are people who are trying to... these clinics are dealing with people who are trying to now get their appointments through as quickly as possible so that they can do it before the ban is officially in place. Arizona clinics have been reporting an influx of reschedulings and patients calling in about concerns. I'm sure that the hotline just doesn't stop ringing at this point.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Clinics specifically dealing with Spanish-speaking Arizona and said it's going to be really bad because, you know, translation and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
exactly. How you gonna explain that when you're understaffed, or maybe you don't even have people that necessarily speak good Spanish.
And maybe, maybe you got people, clinicians leaving the state because they don't want to go to jail.
Precisely. You know what I mean? Precisely.
All of that's reported by NBC. They had a pretty extensive article on that if people want to take a look. But it's not looking good. The point of these laws is so that clinics are forced to close down so that abortion isn't an option at all.
Yeah.
And it's only going to hurt people. It's basically a total abortion ban, except for life of the mother, which seems to be sort of a footnote at the end of the ban. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Doesn't seem like it's going to be anything substantial, especially if you don't have clinics in the state that can actually perform the abortion.
Yeah.
Just going to make things worse. But of course, we're heading the office.
Absolutely.
We're Hiddo. Over here.
Borderline heading the optics.
In that, precisely. We cannot move on from a topic like this without talking about the political implications. So Arizona, swing state. Important
Naturally.
Swing state. One,
Very
one of the five that decide elections.
Don't you need to win like any three to be able to clinch the election?
For Biden, I think he needs to win three.
Biden needs to win three.
Yeah, I think it might be different for Trump. You got Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona. That's the blue wall.
Yep.
And then Georgia and Arizona is like the path for Joe Biden.
Wait, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona? Georgia, Arizona?
Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, okay.
Georgia, Arizona is the path. And I think Biden's trying to compete in North Carolina and Texas as well. But North Carolina is sort of, it was sort of purple, but it's sort of a lost cause. We haven't won it in a while. And Texas is Texas.
Exactly. And that's J. Cole's from. And J. Cole's whack now.
North Carolina, yeah, the Ville,
Dreamville, that's where I came up. Come on now.
Yeah, Dreamville's falling apart.
Biden campaigning in the Ville, trying to get support.
But of course, you know, American electoral system, best in the world, decided by 5 states rather than 50, of course. Arizona is one of the most important swing states. Republicans, Arizona is a must-win state, especially because it's hard to see Michigan going red. Although you can make an argument that voters might not turn out for Biden because of his position on Gaza, perhaps. Yeah. It's hard to see Michigan turning red because it was so blue last time around.
Yes.
Wisconsin's a maybe, Pennsylvania's a maybe, but Arizona's one of those states that's like very plausible for Republicans to win. But now, with this law being in place, it's looking pretty bad for Republicans. This 1864 law going into effect specifically because of Republicans is something that... It's a controversy that Republicans cannot afford to have attached to them right now.
No.
If they want to win the state. And of course, a lot of Republicans couldn't help themselves, at least Arizona Republicans, because they were just they were straight up celebrating when this decision came out.
Straight up celebrating.
Yeah.
Wow. Not only a mockery to women, but a mockery to election strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. And
wow.
The smartest person from Arizona Republican politics I saw on this was Carrie Lake.
No way.
Carrie Lake backed away, and she said, I think this went too far. However, she is on video previously saying, yeah, I think the 1864 law should be back in place.
Broken clock and whatnot, you know what I'm saying? Broken clock and whatnot.
On the other hand, of course, is Donald Trump, who has been trying to strategically balance his position on abortion by basically saying nothing for the last several months.
Yes.
He has not given a clear answer on exactly where he would draw the line at abortion. People have asked him about a 6-week ban. People have asked him about a 15-week ban. He just is not willing to give a clear answer. His usual answer is like, oh, well, I'll find a deal that makes everyone happy. Which, like, on a topic as contentious as abortion in this country, you're never going to make everyone happy. People just got to lose. But Trump had a statement on Truth Social that I think sort of elucidates his position. Or maybe his lack of a position, I should say.
Okay.
So he said this on Truth Social, quote, the Supreme Court in Arizona went too far on their abortion ruling, enacting and approving an inappropriate law from 1864. So now the governor and the Arizona legislature must use heart, common sense, and act immediately to remedy what has happened. Remember, it is now up to the states in the goodwill of those that represent the people. We must ideally have 3 exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. This is important. Democrats are the extremists. They support abortion up until the moment of birth. And even the execution of babies in some cases after birth.
That's so good.
This should not
man.
Be. Arizona legislature, please act as fast as possible. So here you have Trump sort of backing away from the Arizona ruling, but I feel like this is totally incoherent because if it's a states' rights issue, which is what Trump has been saying recently, then shouldn't it be okay for Arizona to say this is when we want our abortion ban to be if it's all just states' rights? Like, if you're deferring to it should be up to the states to decide, I think as a conservative, you could pretty easily say, well, Arizona's decided. Well,
they decided. They figured it out. So it's up to you. Yeah, no. And you know what? After hearing that, I had to look up and see if his statement about being proud about overturning Roe v. Wade was true. And it was. When did he say this? When did he say this message you just read off?
Oh, this was shortly after the Supreme Court acted last week.
Wednesday, Thursday?
Yes.
That's funny because on Monday, in a video statement on abortion policy he posted on social media, God damn it, an ad popped up. Trump said, I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars on both sides wanted and in fact demanded be ended, Roe v. Wade. They wanted it ended.
Bro's just making shit up.
Yeah, all legal scholars on both sides wanted super precedent ended.
Yeah.
God
damn
it.
This is one of those things where it's like Trump doesn't actually have any position. He just wants to look good.
Yeah, but he's throwing shit at the wall.
Right, to be a Republican in this political environment, you can't just fence it on an issue like to be anybody in this political environment, you can't just fence it on an issue like abortion, and that's exactly what he's doing.
Man, that's crazy.
Like, if you're going to defer to states' rights, then you got to let states do what they're going to do. You can't come out and say, well, they should overturn this because, like, you're a Florida resident. Why should you get to decide what Arizona's going to do if you're deferring to the axiom of states' rights?
Uh-huh.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, because nobody actually cares about small government
exactly.
in any sense of the word. Nobody gives a shit about it.
Yeah.
That's That's gas.
Yeah. Of course, right, as you said, nobody actually cares about states' rights. It's just a useful legal strategy and euphemism to get done on a more local level, which you can't get done on a federal level.
Well, exactly.
That's exactly what Dobbs v. Jackson was, right? They weren't going to get a national abortion ban. They weren't going to be able to pass that through Congress. But what they could get is state-by-state abortion bans, which is what they've done, I think, across like 14 or 15 different states at this point. And now Arizona is the newest one. It's basically just hurt as many people as humanly possible, but find some other legal or political explanation to do what you're doing.
I just think it is so crazy that in 15 years, Republicans have kind of like came up on this abortion thing, and now it's kind of like signaling possibly their downfall on it, especially when we consider that they defer to religion so often when talking about abortion. I think it wasn't until the 70s that the church actually like took a stance, or people from the church claimed that the church took a stance about abortion. Like, nobody gave a shit.
Yeah.
No, nobody cared. Religious people did not give a shit. It's a popular thing.
Yeah. Ronald Reagan, when he was governor of California, expanded reproductive rights.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Where are the Reagan conservatives at?
Exactly.
Where are all my Reaganites at, bruh?
Yeah. There's no justification for this. The 1964 law being back in place is crazy. It was a territorial law. It shouldn't happen. Democrats are rightly jumping on this and saying, look, this is what Republicans want, which is exactly what they should be doing. But it seems to be a major issue for Trump and any Republican trying to win in Arizona. If this stays in place up until November, maybe there's a ballot measure. It might be too late for that to get on the ballot, but
it's blue.
Yeah.
Like, if this is there up until November, it's blue.
The Senate seat is basically guaranteed. Joe Biden is basically guaranteed to win the state.
Yes. Yeah. And that's crazy because it's like, I would have guessed Arizona could go either way, but I would put Michigan blue and I would put Pennsylvania blue.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a dub.
Yeah. Yeah, if he gets Arizona, and I guess maybe he'd need Nevada as well, Michigan, Pennsylvania is basically over.
Oh, my goodness.
Especially if he's competing in a place like Texas. I mean, if Joe Biden wins Texas, that's it completely.
Oh, yeah. If Joe Biden wins Texas or Florida, long shot.
Florida's not gonna
I would
happen.
Argue that. We talked about it last week. Maybe if I'm a glass half full kind of guy, it could possibly happen. But I do think Texas is more likely. It's such an interesting election landscape. Shit went from being mid to crazy.
Especially Ted Cruz in Texas. That could be a good moment.
Oh,
I need Ted Cruz to get out of here. Imagine Ted Cruz, never seen Ted Cruz again.
And it's not going to be Beto O'Rourke replacing him?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. Hallelujah.
we're getting to paradise, people. We're getting there.
Have you ever wondered what we're thinking about during the week?
Well, I know what I'm thinking about.
I know what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
I probably know what this guy's thinking about, too. But do you? I don't think you do. But if you want access into, I don't know, my mind palace, the inner workings of what's going on, how I come up with the bars I need to develop this show every week, to produce this wonderful podcast we bring you every week, why don't you head over to X, formerly known as Twitter.com, and give us a follow, you know?
You can also consider becoming a subscriber on YouTube.
That's right.
You could follow us on Instagram, see what we're shitposting on the stories.
Oh, my gosh.
We have a plethora of options available to you if you want to engage with the Hitto community. So consider following us on social media. It's completely free.
For free.
It's completely free, and it supports the show. Next up, I want to talk a little bit more about elections generally, but this time, third parties.
Okay.
You know, we've gotten some hot water. Oh, we're talking about third parties.
You know what? Known third party haters.
Yeah, we are known for hating third parties.
Yeah.
We are known for talking down to voters.
Yes.
we are known for going up to the most emotionally fraught people and saying, if you don't vote, you're literally going to die.
God damn.
That's what we do around here. Of course, I jest, but we do need to talk about third parties. And I'm not just bringing this up to get us in trouble again or to cause more controversy. It actually is in the news. There's a piece out of the New York Times last week detailing how the Republican Party is purposefully platforming third-party candidates as a way to draw votes away from Biden and help Trump win. This is basically drawing from a bunch of different sources, some anonymous, some public that we'll talk about. And it's a pretty clear strategy from the Republican Party to platform third parties to draw votes away from Joe Biden, just barely enough so that Trump can win enough electoral votes.
And they're like, they're fucking biting that shit from the DNC.
Yeah.
It was, I think, in the midterms, the DNC came out that they were funding far-right candidates in primary races to try and get them to be, like, I don't know, the genuine Reagan conservative guy.
And that was a genuine gamble.
And that, yeah, insane gamble.
Uh-huh.
Gamble I don't think really should have been messed with,
yeah,
considering the electoral makeup of this country right now. But they're just stealing that shit. And it's like, I feel like the Democrats had more of a point, though.
Yeah.
Because there are so many, like, just alt-right motherfuckers, people who are willing to vote for the crazy Marjorie Taylor Greens, for the Lauren Boebert's, for the Freedom Caucus people, the insane ones in the House, that strategy could genuinely work to get you kind of an easier fight. But when it comes to Republicans platforming third-party candidates like Cornel West or, I don't know, fucking Claudia De La Cruz, or just giving them money to help prop
them up.
That's
crazy.
That would be insane,
Goldman
right?
Sachs platforming Claudia De La Cruz.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like that's not as sound of a strategy, considering that the people who are going to vote for a Cornel West or a Claudia De La Cruz were never going to vote for Biden in the first place.
Yeah.
You're not pulling votes away. You're maybe turning more people out, which is cool, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not pulling votes away from Biden.
Yeah, well, and let's get into it. So again, this piece, the New York Times reported that Donald Trump and the GOP is basically funding third party candidates as a wedge against Joe Biden. And the plan includes a couple of things. One, they want to specifically promote RFK Jr. as a champion for abortion for people who don't like Joe Biden. So that's one thing they're doing. They want to promote Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, as a radical environmentalist to appeal to specifically young people that care about climate change. They want to appeal directly to Michigan voters Michigan voters that are Muslim in Michigan on the issue of Israel and Gaza, highlighting how bad Biden has been, which is a genuine weakness. Yeah. And they also want to ensure that RFK Jr. can get on the ballot across the country, basically funding his signature campaign and just generally funding his campaign with millions and millions of dollars. So this is kind of a general outline of their plan. And on that last point specifically, there's this billionaire named Timothy Mellon, who's a Republican donor, always gives to Trump. Gave Trump Super PAC $15 million recently, and he also gave RFK Super PAC $20 million.
I wish I had just fucking money to throw
toss.
In the furnace.
Yeah, just to toss
burn,
around.
Like
yeah.
I'm the fucking Joker in Dark Knight. What are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
On top of that, this guy named Scott Pressler, he's a conservative activist, somebody close to the RNC. I think he was tapped to take on one of the major RNC positions. I don't think that's happened yet. But he has directly reached out to Jill Stein and Cornel West to get them enough signatures to be on the ballot in various states, basically offering to help. This guy's conservative. He wants Trump to win, but he's directly trying to make sure third-party candidates can be on the ballot. And if you don't believe all of this, if you think it's sort of dubious, then I have a quote from Steve Bannon himself. This is a diehard Trump loyalist, would do anything to make sure Trump gets elected. He said
on his knees all the time.
He said this to the New York Times, quote, "The path to victory here is clearly maximizing the reach of these left-wing alternatives. No Republican knows that oil production under Biden is higher than ever, but Jill Stein's people do. Stein is furious about oil drilling. The college kids are furious about it. The more exposure these guys get, the better it is for us."
I love that they can just go out and make those statements and say, yeah, Joe Biden is doing more oil drilling than under Trump, and then turn around and just send memes all over Facebook about how Joe Biden has ruined the country's energy independence. Joe Biden is doing all of these electrical vehicle pushes. If we just drill, frack, and burn, he is.
Yeah, no, they're just admitting to lying, and they're using it as political leverage. Like, it's crazy. That's crazy.
If we had a real country.
And the reason I'm bringing this up is because there's a lot of people right now that are considering voting for third party because they genuinely cannot stomach voting for Trump or Joe Biden, which is completely understandable. These guys both suck.
Oh,
you know what I mean? But I want you to take a moment and look at how you're being viewed by Republicans if you are considering voting for third party. If they can't win your vote for Donald Trump, which they probably can't.
Hopefully can't.
They hopefully can't. Then they will gladly see you vote for a third party. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's a part of their strategy. They're stating their plans openly. They're admitting it to the New York Times that, yes, we are good with you voting for third party. This is exactly what we want in order to win a power.
Coming out and telling you, you're literally throwing your vote away.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like, yeah, if you're considering voting for third party, Trump and his strategists are perfectly fine with that. And I'm not saying you're bad for the inclination or that even the individual third party candidates or their policy proposals are necessarily bad. But the intuition here from the GOP is, I think, kind of smart strategically and is ultimately correct. Right. If they can sort of use your cynicism and anger towards the system and Joe Biden to win, then they're going to do that. It's disingenuous. It is cynical, but it is potentially effective. And I just thought it was important to bring this up because this is exactly how they see you. They don't see you as people who are angry at the system. They don't even see you as winnable people necessarily, but they see you as useful for their electoral success.
And it's like Michigan could genuinely prove to be a problem.
Yeah.
If we could get a third party candidate in Michigan that is effectively countering Biden on Gaza, but I guess not much else, and that siphons enough votes away, Biden could lose Michigan.
Yeah.
Not because necessarily he didn't get enough votes, but just because votes were siphoned away. Somebody spoiled him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
the goal.
And that's ultimately worse for what's going on in Gaza, considering Trump's recent statements saying that he would just end it quickly. Let you figure it out.
And deport Palestinian students.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Now, of course, all of this, the strategy wouldn't be nearly as effective if there weren't these weaknesses that are clearly exploitable within the DNC and from Joe Biden, right? If Joe Biden wasn't as bad on Gaza, if Joe Biden wasn't drilling like crazy, these wouldn't be exploitable areas within the electorate that the GOP could use to appeal to people that are considering third-party votes. And to be clear, right, it's on Biden and the DNC to win these votes back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not placing responsibility on the individual voter here. I'm saying it's on Joe Biden to actually do this. But from our standpoint as voters who don't directly control Joe Biden's policy, Trump is perfectly fine with not winning your vote because he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
He's relying on the system skewing towards conservatives. And he knows that if you don't vote Biden and you vote third party, he can probably still win.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's banking on here. And, you know, again, if maybe you don't think there's a grand narrative to draw here. Maybe you don't think we can really make a persuasive argument from this. I still think it's important to know what their strategy is.
Yeah.
It's just some know thy enemy type shit.
And not
this is what they're
going
to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Not do what they really want you to do.
Yeah.
It's also, I just got to say, putting RFK as the like abortion guy, that's insane.
Yeah. Well,
thinking that RFK could come on and like siphon voters off for being pro-abortion. Maybe.
Specifically, like, women that are worried about it. You think he's winning?
I'm saying, the women? You think Biden's... not Biden. You think RFK is the guy that's really going to appeal to all these people? Like, that's nuts.
I think Trump is... Trump always has thrived in a multi-candidate race. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, him one-on-one, it's a lot harder for Trump to win. But when Trump's in a multiple-candidate race, primary in 2016, primary this year, he wins pretty handedly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But... for this specifically in the general election, I think he's been looking at the polling. His team has been looking at the polling, and they're correctly recognizing that one-on-one with Joe Biden, Trump's going to suffer. But if you add in RFK, Jill Stein, maybe Cornel West and others, Trump could force enough votes away from Biden, mm-hmm. two third-party candidates, for him to win. And again, it's cynical, but he doesn't even need those votes in order to win.
No.
And so as a voter, our system is broken. Our electoral system is awful. We need multiple reforms to make this a lot better and more democratic. But know that you could just be falling into the trap that they want you to. And ultimately, a more reactionary outcome is the worst one.
Crazy.
Yeah. Crazy. Not very good.
It's like,
know your enemy.
I feel like RFK, if someone is going out there in one issue voting on abortion, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like RFK is going to siphon more of the conservatives who are pro-abortion. Huge, significant amount of conservatives are pro-abortion. 70% of the country is pro, was pro Roe v. Wade. Like, you got to have conservatives in there too. Like, 20% at the lowest estimates. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like he's going to... That dude's a conservative.
Well, of course.
That dude is far right. He's going to siphon more of them than he is people who are motivated to vote for abortion for good reasons.
Yeah.
And also care about other good things.
That's why the RFK thing is sort of a gamble. Because Biden's team could also use that against Trump and highlight his, like, anti-vaccine policies.
Yeah.
Or him being, like, anti-Semitic and anti-China and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of aspects to RFK that are blatantly conservative, as you said, that Joe Biden and his team could use to their advantage to push people that would vote Trump over to a third-party candidate. But I don't think it's as easy for Joe Biden to do that as it is for Trump to do that against Joe Biden. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, yeah.
But for RFK specifically, I mean, that guy is, I have no idea who he's pulling from. It could be either.
He's got to be in the conservative box.
The only reason that it might be a worry for Democrats is that the environmentalist thing, he was an environmentalist lawyer.
Yeah.
And then the last name. The Kennedy last name.
I think the Kennedy last name
just has cultural resonance. Yeah.
Like, that's crazy, though. But it's like, I do think it's like conservatives put on their thinking caps with this one, possibly. But I do got to stand by the idea that if you're voting for Cornel West, if you're voting for Jill Stein, I don't think you were ever going to vote for anybody else.
Mm.
So I don't know necessarily if those votes could be spoiling the election, but it's unknowable.
Yeah.
I'm not a pollster.
Yeah, I think they're probably looking at 2016, seeing that a lot of third-party votes that if they had gone to Hillary Clinton, she would have won the election.
Yes.
They're looking at 2020 and the sort of third-party votes that may be pulled away from Trump's total. And they're thinking, maybe we can turn the situation on its head and take advantage of people that are angry at Biden because Biden's been the president the last 4 years. I don't know if that intuition is correct.
Yeah.
It's sort of a gamble, but I guess we'll see. And I have to feel like they're onto something here, given the polling data.
God, it would be so easy for Biden to not have to worry about that.
Yeah.
It'd be so easy for Biden to just do the right thing.
Yeah, if he could just, literally, if he was just better on Israel, this wouldn't be an
issue. It'd be fine. Yeah. It'd be fine, because that's where all of the third party candidates are going to go. Mm-hmm. That's where the people who would get out and vote for Biden are going to go.
Except RFK. RFK is insanely Zionist.
Nice.
Like, nice. He is just as pro-Israel as Biden is.
Well, they're going to go to the Cornell West. Yeah. They're going to go to the Cornell West, or Jill Stein even, maybe.
But
I don't know.
Cornell West isn't even on the ballot in a lot of places, I don't think. I don't even know that RFK is either. But Jill Stein's got the Green Party at her back. She'll probably be on the ballot across the country.
They always get, like, I don't know, like a percent or two.
They'll get something. But we'll see what happens, and keep your eye out.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Speaking of conservatives and conservatives doing kind of like bad things all over the place, we got to talk about one of my favorite guys, Ron DeRegulation.
Ronda Stiletto.
Ronda dropout. Loser. Ronda sucks.
Uh-huh.
Ronda not cool at all. Ronda, give him a swirly.
Ronda, small little guy.
Ronda, tiny little boy, getting those heels. Oh,
Ronda
my
pudding
goodness.
Fingers. Come on, baby.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, my goodness. But anyway, we have new updates in the Texas or Florida do something bad, so the other responds with something worse cycle.
Oh, competition for worst state of all time.
This has been a popular cycle the last, I want to say, 2 years, where, say, Texas does an abortion law, Florida does a worse one. Mm-hmm. Florida does a gay law, Texas says they would enforce sodomy laws if they were on the books. Yeah. Like, they are competing for the worst place to be. My pick last year was Texas, but the year before that, it was Florida.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is just like the Kendrick and Drake beef. They are just, they keep upping the stakes against each other, and we just don't know what's going to happen next.
At the top of their game and in respective areas of things.
Uh-huh.
And they're, oh my goodness, oh my goodness.
Trying to do better than each other, yeah.
We got updates on that. This time, Ron DeSantis wants to outdo Greg Abbott's 2023 plan to eliminate the requirement for mandatory water breaks for construction workers. You remember we covered this last year?
Yes.
So if you don't remember, dear listener, or if you're a new listener, last year Greg Abbott signed a state legislation that says you actually can't regulate at the county or city level whether or not workers have to have paid water breaks.
Yeah.
You just can't do it.
Construction workers, yeah.
And so now workers just don't have to have that shit.
Uh-huh.
Insane.
In the Texas heat.
Something that's literally going to kill people, right? And Florida, if you can guess, wants to now do something that I would say is worse.
Okay.
And more all-encompassing. Ron DeRegulation this week signed legislation that forbids city and local governments from making rules that mandate workers be protected from the heat.
Nice.
So dope. NPR reports that in Florida, there are about 2 million people from construction to agriculture that work all day out in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. Florida is hell, bro. That shit is, it is hot down there.
You know, I don't know the exact demographic breakdown of construction workers in Florida, but I feel like it's kind of racially motivated.
Oh, we do know a bit of the agricultural worker breakdown, though.
Yeah, precisely. Uh-huh,
which, massive issues there. They're
gotta be racially motivated.
People, like, flee. Florida is in the midst of an agricultural crisis because of, I can't remember exactly what they did last year, but they did some law that made it so that if you're hiring migrants, you get in trouble. And so a lot of people aren't. And now they can't staff these
places. They were cracking down on undocumented labor, I think.
Yes. Despite undocumented labor holding up these fucking states, Florida and Texas.
And like on its face, it's like, oh yeah, you're cracking down on undocumented immigrants being exploited. No, you're doing that so you can get the immigrants out.
Exactly.
Not because you want the businesses to stop.
Yeah, yeah. You're doing this for racist reasons.
Exactly.
Not because of any like principles.
Not workers' rights.
Exactly. Because if you wanted workers' rights, you'd have a different stance on the overall issue. But I digress.
Mm-hmm.
So after, and for years, people have been lobbying for just simple protections like paid breaks, fucking water, and access to shade from Florida's blazing sun. 300,000 of these agricultural or construction workers, these hot guys, live in Miami-Dade County. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Within Miami-Dade, there have been ongoing negotiations and rules up for consideration to actually protect the former from literally dying of heat exhaustion.
Yeah. Makes
huge,
sense to me.
Huge issue. Last year, Florida had its hottest summer on record ever. Mm. I think they had 140 days above like a heat index of like 81 or 91 or something like that.
Yeah.
Either way, hot.
And people are going to keep working.
Stupid hot.
Uh-huh.
And you got it. You got to pay rent.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Working.
You got to go pay rent.
And buildings so, got to get built.
After signing this bill, that issue was just dropped. Miami-Dade can no longer regulate any of that, right? And so proponents of heat exhaustion have claimed that individual counties being able to make their own rules is just too confusing.
Bro, how?
What you mean?
I mean, I guess
it's confusing. Like, if I'm in Miami, like, what do you? I got to do something different.
What is that? An argument for like a state level water regulation?
Well, you would
he's
think
not going to do that.
You would think it is, and I just you can't seriously expect me to believe that the people who like run businesses are our best and brightest. When anytime anyone wants to do something good, or anytime there's legislation at any level, state, local, city. They try, that would even have a marginal effect on profits, right? Because I don't think a paid water break is really going to do much.
30 minutes.
To hurt your bottom line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I if anything, that's going to increase productivity.
Exactly.
If I'm dehydrated and fucking dying in the blazing sun, I'm not going to be working my body as hard as if I had water breaks. Sit down for a moment and rest, you know, like humans need.
Mm.
And anytime these laws can have marginal effects on their profits, they just play dumb.
Yeah.
And you expect me to think that these business leaders are genuine leaders and smart and good people.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on? And then we as a society just coddle them.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. Miami-Dade has a different rule than fucking Orlando?
Yeah.
When you're working in Miami-Dade, you have to look at state and local laws, which you already have to do?
And it's like, well, yeah, and like there's tons of different local and county laws that they already have to abide by outside of just water breaks. But again, we've said this so many times before. We know what the country looks like without state intervention in the economy to protect workers' rights.
Yeah.
You got children in mines. You got people working more than 40 hours a week. You got people really struggling under bad working conditions. You got the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory.
Yes.
Like bad shit like that. Without state intervention, that's what happens. We still have to have these rules that impose onto business owners that are seeking to make profit that, hey, these people aren't machines. Mm-hmm. They need rest. They need a variety of different things to keep them going and not dying in the heat of the sun.
Even every single regulation, workers' rights regulation, has been written in blood.
Exactly,
like that's why we thought maybe this is a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And people just want to back on that? People just want to go back on that for profits? People like Carol Bowens, the chief lobbyist for an industry group, the Associated Builders and Contractors of Florida, had this to say, quote, "Predictability and certainty is what we look for. You want a set of consistent guidelines so you know the roadmap." She's just playing dumb.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but when you're working in Miami-Dade, you're already looking up local laws. You're already figuring out different things that you have to do because every county does things a little bit differently.
Yeah, zoning, code, all this kind of stuff is going
to
be different.
You already have to look into this.
Mm-hmm.
You will never get me to believe that it is so much harder to look up. If I'm staffing people in Miami, do they have to have a water break?
Yeah, wait
laws,
a minute.
Laws like this are incredibly clear. This is not the average bureaucratic red tape stopping you from being able to do something. Mm-hmm. This is workers need a water break, paid water break, sure, 30 minutes, whatever that locality wants to put it at. Workers need shade for at least a little bit, and workers just shouldn't be fucking dying on job site because of heat exhaustion.
Yeah, you're telling me that you're looking up the zoning laws, the building codes, you're looking up how tall the buildings are allowed to be and all this sort of thing, but you can't look up, oh, do I need to give my workers this long of a water break or this long or however long?
You can't have a little poster in your office that has the different county breakdowns?
Yeah.
You already do that.
Well, famously, it's not going to be management that has posters like workers deserve this, this, and this.
This is true.
It's going to be the workers that hang that bitch up. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
Yeah, they're going to be like, click the sign. I'm on break. 30-minute break. Yeah.
This lady then went on to claim that the federal government provides sufficient guidelines for something like this. And that claim is particularly interesting considering that NPR also reports there are no federal requirements that outline when it is too hot to work.
Oh.
There are only recommended standards.
That's interesting. You notice how it's always the managers that are saying we know what's best for workers?
Uh-huh.
You notice how it's never the people that are out there doing the back-breaking, sweltering work in the summer sun that are saying we know what's best for workers.
It's never the people who had to watch their friend pass out from heat exhaustion and fall off a ladder and fucking die.
Yes.
That know what's best for workers.
Yes.
It's always the people who get to sit in their air-conditioned office or their truck that is too fucking big on the job site. Mm-hmm. Like, come on.
It's the people that are watching the construction workers work, never the person building the building.
And it's like, what is this argument? The feds sufficiently handled this by not. They've sufficiently given us guidelines by letting us do whatever we want.
Yeah, this shit's sufficient by just saying like, hey, maybe don't send your workers out in 100-degree weather.
Like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah.
You got to be fucking kidding me. And it's people like this that are in Ron DiStiletto's ear that lead him to make statements like this after the bill's signing. Ron said, quote, "I think they were pursuing something that was going to be a cause of a lot of problems down there," where there naturally refers to Miami.
What fucking problems, Ron?
The problems... exactly, are, oh my God, how am I supposed to know, like, if I'm working in Miami-Dade, like, how would I know if I got to give my workers water?
These fucking communist work breaks.
I'm saying, what do you mean you have communist standards also, in one part of the state, not like, the other?
Well, this is federalism, dog. It comes with the territory. The U.S. is a federalist system. You have different laws you have to abide by depending on where you are. That's what, like, dual sovereignty is, you know what I mean?
Iran is being big government, doing overreach here.
Yeah.
Like, you can't wrap your head around it any other way.
You have to abide by federal laws when you're in the country. You abide by the state laws that you're in. You abide by the local laws of the locality that you're in, or the city laws. That's how the system is built to function. It's fucking stupid.
And it's also crazy because if Ron and anyone else involved in this bill's passing were actually concerned about Miami having different standards than the rest of the state, and if they cared about their own constituents, they would bring those protections to the state level.
Well, no, yeah, precisely. Like, I don't necessarily have a problem with the state saying, no, this is an issue we need to handle statewide.
Yeah.
Right? There could be an argument to be made that, like, a sort of incongruity doesn't make much sense, but to just say that you can't make any of these regulations for your workers, and we also aren't going to make regulations for the workers, that is what is exactly harmful.
And it's like, the thing is, like you said, I can be empathetic to the idea that different counties having wildly different laws requiring wildly different protections can be, sure, it can be confusing for a business, or it can be an annoying bit of red tape to go through, say you're working cross county lines or whatever's going on. But that's not an argument to not have those things in the first place.
Yeah.
When you do that, you're using that as plausible deniability to be, I don't know, pro heat death.
That's what I was going to say, is it seems like this is a sort of thinly veiled excuse for just deregulating. Like, they're saying, like, oh, well, it's a little bit confusing, that's why we're getting away, that's why we're getting rid of this. But in reality, it's, I don't care if my workers die in the summer heat. I want businesses, you know, it's probably Ron saying, businesses lobbied me to do this, so I'm gonna do
it. Well, exactly, that's what that industry group is. It's just a group of lobbyists that lobbied him at the state level because they didn't like what was happening in Miami-Dade, because they were gonna lose, I don't know, 5 cents on the hour.
What
I mean, like, it's absolutely asinine to take these people seriously.
Our construction project takes 2 weeks longer.
Oh no, that 30-minute water break that we stagger so we always have coverage on the job site.
Yeah,
because not everyone's on break at the same time. That's gonna be a hit to productivity. Your highway construction might take a day longer.
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. Like, what? I can't take these people seriously. I just can't. It's almost beyond parody. But it happens so often everywhere throughout the country that it's just a regular occurrence. Florida is hot as hell, bruh.
Yeah, also, like, Florida, Miami, isn't that the place that had the building collapses?
Oh, yeah, because they weren't up to code.
I feel like you don't need further deregulation in Miami-Dade. Buildings were already collapsing a few years ago. Like, maybe you need more regulation?
And it's like, I would argue that Miami-Dade is probably the most populous county in Florida, right?
I would think so.
Miami's like the city.
The spot.
You know, that's where you go to party.
Uh-huh.
I would probably say, I'd be willing to bet Miami-Dade is the most populous county in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You are telling me that you're just not going to listen to all those millions of constituents that live there?
Yeah.
You're just going to say, oh, their concerns? Actually, you can't make that rule.
And it's like, we know that these regulations are good for the worker, of course, because they get to have breaks, but it's also good for the finished product and good for the citizens that are going to be using the finished product.
Yeah. Maybe it would be easier for your state inspectors, all of the people surrounding, like, the construction industry, say, when they do their inspections, when they check on buildings, when they appraise them, maybe when a worker's not exhausted, not sweating their ass off, not literally about to pass out, maybe their nails will be a bit straighter. Maybe things will be a bit more sturdy.
Yeah, maybe the building will last a little longer.
Exactly. Maybe it won't just fucking collapse because it's not up to code. But Florida, not really famous for paying attention to that kind of thing.
Really just a banal evil in our system, huh?
Absolutely.
Like, we're talking about all these crazy things like abortion and Iran and all this stuff, but really in the background it's just, yeah, we're making things worse for everyone. Intentionally.
Yeah. Actually, you can't protect the worker. That's the state's job, but we're not going to, because specific bills targeting heat protection, like protecting workers from the heat, from the blazing Florida sun, have come up in the legislature several times in the last couple of years.
I can imagine.
And they've all been shot down.
That's crazy.
Like, come on, brother.
Well, there's no excuse for it. That's crazy.
And you know, speaking to people who I would never shoot down. I gotta give a special, special, warm-blooded American thank you.
Yeah, these people are my blazing sun.
To the people that not only keep these lights on, but make my world go round.
Oh, yeah, these people make me faint.
I'm in their orbit.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They make me faint when I see them. Special thanks to Caden Kraut, Lord Tal the Radiant, Chris the Boastman, Christy Beck, 40% Spite, Dylan B., Andrew Harris, Mike Chaplinsky, Mattias T., Omar Zuno, Clayton LaFed, Mark Yeager, Caleb Joy, Rich Toro, Tari, Gavin Mayer Maldonado, Hunter W., Fergalaki, Max Vezquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mooberry, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Jeff Muzzy, Bagel Burrito, Cincy Alex, Joe Stenstrom, Adrian Sandoval, Chloe Sam 601, Colleen Kotzever Yook, Jennifer DeVoe, Big Bird Titty, Crawfishin, Beneth Bennington III, Alexia Benanti, Niche, Big Booty B. Down, Sam Maloney, Two Headed Boy, Ben Shapiro's Boyfriend, Jonathan Cassis, Luke O'Shea, Cucker Tarlson, Danielle Jackson, The Word of Microsoft, Jennifer Signs, Aaron and His Gundam Gundams, Darth Father, Tailored for Content, Corey Chambers, Sewer Snack, L.E.N., Devin Hatchard, Retro Mondo, Emma the Dude Slayer, Veronica, aka V, Raxon, Asmith, The Grotler, Flower Clown, Beetlebugs, Murder in a Trench Coat, Lonnie Rogers, Slavic and Sapphic, Casey Lynn Kelly, Snake Eyes, In Hope of Giants, AK Gon, Aquana, Don,
Zach Lantian, Info Russell, Austin Greif, Marcus Corbett, Caleb Roper, Taylor Rensock, Ishi Teddy, Cammy, Tylan Freeman, Steak Daddy, Tay Tay, Isaac Hodges, Madeline C, Pab the Pab 69, Kayla Lowe, Anna Valenik, Casey C, Sayesta West, August, Particular Pickman, Sir Capilot, Jeff Signs, Howard the Duck, Brennan is Egg, JR, Drew Batchilder, Froggy Gumdrop, Zen doing their best, Jackie Boy, Shameless, Coherent Babbles, Sasha, MJ is Sharp, Michaela Muncie, The Wallace 3000, Southwest Socialism, Jared Finch, Evil Vegan, Tactical Snowflake, Son of Ander, Vanilla Bryce, Willie Swags, Chris E, Kishan Lala, Amanda R, Hanky Panky, Tyler J, Damian Blues, Real Nurse RN, Ashley White, Dick Cheney and 3 Inch Heels, Lalo Valesco, Particulon, Mimfrez, Gorgeous Girl Mukes, Classified Jones, Lauren, Uncharismatic Boar, Sasquatch, Rhonda Stiletto, Midwest Marxist, and My Mom. Thank you all so much for supporting the show on Patreon. We had a couple people join.
We did.
Patreon recently. If you're not on that list, but you deserve it, we missed you.
Harass us.
Let us know. DM us.
Please.
We'll get you on the list if you belong there. And if you're listening, if you're at the end of this episode and you aren't a patron, but you want to be a patron.
Yeah.
Well, if you're at the end of this episode, you should be a patron.
Just remember, you belong with me.
Yeah, exactly. You are my special.
Oh, and my goodness.
In the comments. If you made it all the way to the end, in the comments, let us know whose side you're on, Drake or Kendrick Lamar.
Please do.
J. Cole already conceded, so yeah, you don't got to take his side,
maybe
unfortunately.
J. Cole fell off like The Simpsons.
Yeah, maybe the fall off came sooner than we thought. Let us know whose side you're on.
Me, I'm never apologizing. Mm-mm. Frankly, never.
No, I'm really like that. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Have a great week.